this afternoon.
I'll be with you as soon as I get untangled. Well, this morning we have a rather important but controversial subject. I think nearly everyone remembers the idea of the ancients that money was not a commodity but a convenience. Now, we got that point rather badly confused in recent centuries. Today, we have lost sight of the origin of the financial system. Back in the primitive times, a man came to market to barter. He bartered what he had for what he wanted. If he had 4 sheep, he might get 1 camel, and everyone was happy. A little later, it was simplified. Paper receipts were passed about. It became a little inconvenient as civilization became more complicated to try to carry the collateral with you wherever you went. You wanted some way of arbitrating or shopping or exchanging various commodities. Out of this grew a very basic system in which seals or inscriptions upon tablets became the basis of financial relationships. As early as the beginning of the Christian era, the Chinese had a system of financing which was based upon the number of deer in the imperial preserves. The money factor was printed or painted upon deer skin, and the whole system was conserved in the person of the emperor. As time went on, all these things changed, and we came to the beginning of a more or less organized system of establishing values. We know, for instance, that in early Virginia, the prime rate of exchange was based upon tobacco. Tobacco was currency. Among some of the natives of the South Pacific, cory shells were prime assets. Many of the Central European and Eastern European peoples began to take an interest in salt. Salt was a currency in a number of different countries. Salary was wage paid in salt. Salvation was the saving power of salt. We find in the Bible that Christ refers to his disciples as the salt of the earth. Blocks of salt were gifts of imperial value of the kings of Abyssinia. All kinds of different devices were advanced to meet the need of exchanges. Today we are in a dilemma, and it's getting worse all the time. We look around us and we do not see how the present economic system can last to the beginning of the next century. It is getting more complicated every day, and practically no common sense thoughtfulness is being directed toward it. We are trying to find out how people might live on another planet, but we are not able to make life endurable on this one. We are still constantly exploring and scientifically extending and expanding, and we are creating monopolies and masters over monopolies, and still nothing is solved. We are in financial problems. The world, theoretically speaking, if you would put it on a computer, is simply bankrupt. We could never pay the debts. So we must now find some way of not handing on to the next generation a bill that nothing and no one can meet. There is always the possibility of pushing forward a little bad news, but the bad news is too powerful today to be endured. We cannot continue in this way. So we begin to think what we could do to meet some of these problems. And we realize that the whole system under which we live, the whole political, social, economic system, is all a matter of money. The entire system is sustained by money, and money today is debt. So we are in a bit of a jam, and something must be done to take care of it. The buying power of money is very largely limited to boundaries. Some countries have what we call strong currencies and others weak currencies. We also know that money is under constant speculation. And we have forgotten one of the prime principles of ancient thought, and that is that money is not a commodity. Money is never the prime asset, although we have tried to make it this from the beginning of our national and world history. We have countries today where they can buy nothing with a dollar, practically. Other countries where dollars are strong. And this controls trade, and to a large measure controls internal peace. The more complicated the economic situations become, the more revolutions and anarchies set in. We're in a world now in which practically every nation is dissatisfied, frightened, and insolvent. All this calls for taking something besides a new regulation into the next century. If we want to get into the century in one piece and stay there and look forward to some kind of improvement, we must begin, therefore, by considering our monetary system. Now, I know there may be objections to this thinking, but I believe firmly that one of the first answers we have to consider is a world currency. We must have a dollar that is a dollar everywhere, from the Congo to the highest peaks of our economic system. Now, a dollar being a dollar everywhere requires certain basic considerations. In other words, the prime asset of a sound financial system is the population itself. Humanity is the prime asset in his own banking system. It is not what he has, but what he is, that determines whether his system will endure. Therefore, it is not a question as to whether some nations are too poor for a standardized banking, or some are too rich to want it. The answer is very simple. The great asset is humanity. And therefore, this is the basis of all security in economics. That means that no matter how poor a country may be, there are others that are more wealthy. But it will even off so that it is possible to have a world currency. Now, certain changes have to be made to make this feasible. But the basis of it is that there is no longer any need for this continuous changing, exchanging of imports and imports, tariffs, and all this type of thing. If we work upon the basis that what we are selling from buying is humanity, we are not simply buying cars and exporting engines. What we are doing are we are exporting labors of human beings. And we are working with a unit of approximately 6 billion human beings, and they are the prime asset of the world. And when we start to make this prime asset unendurable or incapable of surviving, then we are doing the same thing to the world that comes with an economic panic on Wall Street. So we think in terms now of a single system of money, a money that is universally distributed. But we will not necessarily mean that this is the end of the banking system. It only means that we're going to have to turn to a world bank. Now, a world bank has some advantages, but if it is carried on with too much political interference, it would become a disaster. But a world bank should be the power that handles the prime asset, the integrity and probabilities of profit for the whole human race. Now, this could be an entirely new setup, or it could be simply a transferring of machinery. All the little banks all over the world could stay, but they would stay as part of a bank, of a world bank system. It would be based upon the concept that wherever you go, as the English used to say, a pound's a pound the world around. There would be no more conflicting or disparaging of various currencies. There would be always this one total supply. If all the wealth of the world was under proper control, there could never be poverty. Poverty is unbalance. Poverty is somebody working for too little and someone else making too much. There is no reason why, on a financial basis, humanity cannot be self-supporting. It can become capable of handling its own future without interference from outside forces. Irregularities of management are one of the causes of disaster. Now, the idea of a World Bank can be regarded as the basis of something else that is very, very necessary to make it a success, and that is the abolishment of one of our favorite industrial principles. As I believe it was Ben Franklin observed, Brother Wiley, that there's always trouble when we borrow and lend. Therefore, the idea of money to make money has gotten us into this predicament. We do not want to work. We want our money to work for us. But we are living organisms, and our money isn't. Our money is simply something we have accumulated, saved up, or hoarded in order not to participate in the world's emergencies. If the emergencies are removed, then the necessity for this type of business mismanagement no longer exists. In other words, money cannot make money because it has no place to get it from except itself. And this is the beginning of something that is even more difficult to study and analyze than the curve of the cosmic compendium. There is no way it can be done. So we have a new idea in the form of a banking system which neither loans nor borrows. Because it neither loans nor borrows, it cannot be manipulated. Another point that is very important is that the world banking system should not be under the political control of any nation. The moment the nation has rights to control the banking system, the manipulation of funds is inevitable. Therefore, the nation, like the individual, would be required to depend upon the World Bank to do its banking. And when the nations or countries or states or individuals need funds, they can secure them, but they secure them from something that they cannot actually personally control. And this means a very important problem to be faced. The integrity of this system, a World Bank, must be completely free from political compromise. It cannot be a place to hide unpleasant funds. It cannot be manipulated by any political party. It cannot be expended for any political purpose, and it cannot be used for any purpose other than that which the people or the government wish to use it for. But it must pass through a neutral agent so that the various countries, like a great corporation, with modern computerization, this is easy. We will know why every country borrows everything that it needs, what it spends it for, and when it pays off. This would put more or less humanity on a business basis, free from the domination of private interests. Private interests can use the World Bank just as anyone else, but they must admit why they use it, what they use it for, and how they're going to return it. These things would change the entire face of our financial world and would actually do no one any harm. It is simply a case where we have to begin to think in terms of survival rather than trying to patch up a hopeless situation. One of the great causes for debt is the making of money from money. It's a case where the interest gradually eats up the principal and still nothing is left. We are now paying mortgage money and debt money for billions and billions of dollars that can never be replaced. This was not a reasonable situation. So we'll consider for a moment the possibility of a World Bank with a world currency. All nations would use the same common symbols, would use the same currency and put small money the same change. But it would all be geared and told and cycled and indemnified by the World Bank. It would be a World Bank note, not an American bank note or an English pound. It would be a World Bank note, equally circulated and equally acceptable in every country on earth. This would end the exploitation of money. And having this type of money to work with, we kind of find how we use it. Supposing we say, well, everybody would borrow, but nobody would pay. But that is not quite right, because anyone who borrows would find it inevitable that he would have to pay. Supposing he borrowed $1,000 because he wanted to spend a weekend in Las Vegas. Now, this is a serious business problem involving great depths of integrities. So he borrows it. And there it is. But he's paying for it with the currency of the World Bank. He gets up there and he pays $200 a day for his room. This $200 a day he pays for in World Bank currency. And the hotel, in turn, takes this money and deposits it in its business account in the World Bank. And in the course of the time, the inflow and outgo would continue, and nobody would be broke. It would definitely mean that everything that you take out would ultimately go back. And without interest or without usury or without any problem of this kind, all you take out, all would go back. And at the end of any given length of time, theoretically, the World Bank would have exactly the same capital. This in end also would begin to create a certain censorship, which we desperately need. We do not know where our money goes. We do not know what we spend it for or how important things are. But we cannot go into bankruptcy from extravagance if every bill that we pay for our extravagance goes back to the same bank. We have a system in which, while we may take it out in one piece, it will go back in several pieces as we spend it, but it will all have to go back. There is no mortgage, no usury. There is nothing that can prevent 100% of what we take out ultimately going back 100%. And if there is no detouring for private interests, we can keep a World Bank going indefinitely, far into the future of things. And it will increase with the population of the world, for it is a living total institution for a living total world, and not a series of private institutions trying to run each other into bankruptcy. The bankruptcies of various forms of business that we know at the present time are very largely a matter of chicanery in relationship to financial affairs. We know beyond any question of doubt that many contracts are given for all kinds of national defense and national insurance. And they are all padded. Everything is more than it ought to be. Everyone is concerned only in profit, because profit creates leisure for someone or wealth for someone at the expense of the rest. There is no way of handling this unless the very process itself is broken. Otherwise, we will be able to elect even the most honest person, and in a short time, they will be picked up in this miasma that we call capitalism. Now, capitalism isn't bad. There's nothing wrong about it. The only thing is, capitalism is a dream for all humanity and not for a minority group. Capitalism is equality. It is democracy. Capitalism is the right of everyone to what they need, and democracy is the proper government by which they can attain it. Therefore, there is no conflict here. The only conflict is that the World Bank is the final capitalist, and it is administering the wealth of the world to the world for the good of the world. If it is at any time charted off into the keeping of any private group, the same problems we've always had will come back. It has to be a complete system in itself. We have something a little bit close to it in the postal system of the world, which now recognizes the postage stamps of other nations and altogether forms a postal union in which each country agrees to handle the mail of all other countries. Now, the postal union could be a little example of the need of a great banking union, a union of the distribution of the world's funds. It could be well provided for catastrophes and matters of this kind. We wouldn't be required to continually raise funds for disasters and catastrophes. It would be that all we have is available to all of us all of the time. And this does not mean that we will be very rich or have the complete control of money, but it means that we will be free from the burden of fear, burden of unemployment, and burden of political dishonesty. We will find that all branches will become more honest when the medium they handle is honest and those handling it are honest. Therefore, it seems very important that a World Bank never come under the proprietorship of any nation or any group of nations. It must be available from all to all. Now, if you carefully consider this, you'll realize that the Chinese had somewhat of this idea in their system of agriculture. The Chinese, the Taoists particularly, used water as a universal symbol of life. So we can say for a moment that water and wealth, or water and the financial structure, have something in common. It is water that makes the fields green. It is water that carries the merchandise down the rivers to the sea. And all of these things are part of a universal natural process. The water flow is continuous. But according to some experts, at least, there is never actually more or less water in the world. It is variously distributed in all kinds of ways. It exists in three primary forms: in the forms of a gas or atmospheric sustaining, a liquid, and a solid if it is frozen. So water becomes a symbol of available to all peoples of the earth. And it begins in the mountain. It goes down the sides of the mountain and flows into the stream. And along the sides of the stream, the natives build their villages. The streams finally converge to form a river. And on the river, there are boats. And there are larger communities. And the rivers fall into the sea. And the sea becomes the basis of fishing and navigation. And after it reaches the sea, the sun shines on it. And the sun raises the water again and turns it into a vapor or a mist and drops it back on the mountain. And the whole cycle begins again. There is never any interruption. It may be clear here and rainy there. But on the face of the earth, this endless cycle goes on. And this was the idea of the Chinese concept of what was good for all, was that which was available to all. And this was in perfect accordance with universal nature and the plan of things. So if we are watchful with this problem and can do something to stimulate proper attention, we can end forever most of the problems that arise from wealth. The primary problem, of course, is poverty. The secondary problem is crime. The third problem is sickness and death. These things are all affected to some degree by the instability of the economic system. Health is damaged by the exorbitant cost of medical skill. Medical skill is the result of small groups or small nations or even large nations individually handling their health problem. We've reached a case now where anything that is of importance to mankind must be handled collectively. We can no longer have all kinds of separate ways of trying to solve one problem. There is only one possible solution, and that is common sense. And until we come to that, there is no answer. We can never prop up the present system into the next future with any security. We are going to ultimately be definitely damaged and perhaps run into the final bankruptcy, which we do not want. But it is very difficult to realize that this bankruptcy is due to wealth and not to poverty. The bankruptcy is due to the fact that we mistake the structure of nature. Nature moves collectively. The old planet we live on lives and develops and survives for the good of everything upon it, whereas man, being a small fraction of what is on it, spends most of his time trying to destroy the rest of it. He destroys natural resources, he wastes them. He does everything possible to make something for himself and leave nothing for the future. He doesn't realize this, but he is doing it every single day. We are simply pushing off the bad news so that our children and their children must carry the weight of it. This will not work. It cannot succeed. It will lead from one tyranny to another. Tyranny is mostly due to the centralization of power. That is the opposite of what we term democracy. And the ultimate form of democracy is that the world is one unit, with every nation and every individual in that unit part of one great system. And that great system is basically economic, because economics governs employment, it provides raw materials, it does everything that we need, it is the basis of pension plans and all this. But with the proper structure, there is no need for a pension plan, because from beginning to end, the monetary system exists for the purpose of maintaining a normal flow of wealth or money to every family on earth. It has to be this way. We have to divide the means by the number of ends we expect to serve. And we do this, it would be amazingly simple. We would no longer have dictators going off with 100 million or something of that kind. We would no longer have these vast contracts that we don't understand, because these things would be all subject to the actual flow of world resource and would be completely out of the hands of political groups. This can never work if a political group can control the wealth. It can only be true where the world's necessities, values, and commodities control all classes and are served equally by all individuals. Even now, with the late start, it would be quite possible to make some steps in this direction, steps that would get us away from the continual fear, danger, and anxiety about tomorrow. We are tired of the ups and downs of the stock exchange. The stock exchange is no answer to anything. It will make one man a millionaire today and a pauper tomorrow. There is no security here. And there is constant finagling, constant ulterior motives. And one thing that a different, truly proper system would be to help to advance virtue by not rewarding vice. We should not employ and reward individuals for their dishonesty. We should not allow the making of money to conceal the lack of integrity. Now we can say that the whole situation rests on integrity. No system without integrity can survive. But one of the best ways to improve integrity is to lower the probabilities of lack of integrity. If we make dishonesty less profitable, we will automatically have more integrity. And this in turn will gradually reveal the values and the securities and the well-being that integrity alone can make possible. The idea of integrity at the base of civilization is the only hope any civilization has of survival. And world integrity is the guarantee of our world and survival and going forward into the next century with some hope of peace and integrity. These things should be taught in school. The school child should be taught that poverty is not necessarily our heritage. Poverty does not mean that in spite of anything we can think of and anything we can do, the poor will be with us always. actually poverty now with 6 billion people as creating produce of one kind or another, scattered over nations which are gradually becoming literate, raising their standards of culture and education. There is no reason why the gross product of the earth should not sustain mankind with dignity. Now, this dignity is something most people are a little bit afraid of. There is not too much love of dignity in this world. Most everyone wants what they want right now, regardless of what it costs. But they do not remember so well what it cost them when they lost everything they had. The problem is that any system of ethics must be gradually supported by the cooperation of those who it serves. Without this cooperation, nothing is possible. That is why nature, in its infinite wisdom, does not bring a reform until the present condition is intolerable. We won't change until we have to. It's just like the individual on a narcotic. You can give them all the cheer they want, but a great many of them prefer to remain narcotics until the end and have one great big high before they die. Well, the world at this moment is much in that condition. We're on the verge of a big high before we die. Nations, countries, districts, cities, families are all sick. They are all in problemed by situations which they cannot solve. So the only thing that seems reasonable is to have one great big flash before it all ends. Unfortunately, nature doesn't see it that way. Nature is not going to let us destroy ourselves, but it is going to force us to correct our ways. It is going to force us to realize that we are one family and that there is a lot of work to be done right here before we devote too much time and energy to outer space. We've got too much that needs to be done here. The unsolvable problem is relationships in the levels of humanity. These are the things that have to be solved. In order to solve these problems, we either have to arbitrate them through intelligence or fight them off with rebellions and all kinds of atrocities. We have to solve things by making them honest. We have here on this planet all that we need for security, but it is not available to us. It is mortgaged, it is owned by somebody else, it is part of a great cartel, or it is under political influence that is adverse to the public good. So we have to recognize the need of setting up the skeleton framework of one world concept. Our communications tie us together. We listen to the same programs on television. Various trades are being interchanged. We are making things for people all over the world, and they're making them for us. We are in business everywhere. But too much of our business is monkey business. And until we clear this up, we're not going to have the securities that we need. There is absolutely no need for mortgaging of anything. There is no possible reason to borrow or lend, because everything that we can borrow only, actually, from the human wealth. And the only thing we can pay off is with that human wealth. And if we set it up properly, we are now stepping into the next stage of world affairs. We know today that there are United Nations movements. There are various groups trying to bring together people to a better understanding. But most of these better movements are limited and restricted by the financial equation. Even the countries they represent are not willing to make any sacrifice for the common good, or very little sacrifice. All these things have to be taken and put into a new pattern. One world, one family, one source of labor, one work, and one reward for labor. Labor can be anything from digging a ditch to studying through telescopes or in laboratories. It can be in business, the sciences, the philosophies, and the religions. But in any case, wherever it is, it must be part of a one-world structure. This must be no longer any barriers. In religion, this means religious tolerance, absolutely. It means that everyone is recognized as part of a religious world, and we pick out of religion everything that is necessary for the moral growth, ethical standing, and integrity of the human being. And under whatever name it comes, we recognize it and respect it and support it. The proper control of wealth could be the greatest moralizing agent that we know, because money is so important to most people that the control of it, the direction of it, and the proper use of it is a new educational pattern that should be begun and augmented in the public school system. We should know definitely that children growing up understand why a new and complete reform of all economic policy is absolutely essential to the survival of mankind. Lacking this, and continuing in our present course of hating each other, fighting each other, we will finally be all victims of some form of atomic disaster, or simply starve from the complete destruction of our natural resources. Waste is failure to recognize. We do not think now much about how other people use what they have, as long as we do what we want to with what we have. But if it finally becomes obvious that what everybody wants to do is important to everybody else, and that any misuse of values damages not the person that it was intended to damage, but the whole of civilization, we are coming to the point where we are one people, and we have to be. This means education should be pointed in this direction. We should learn, along with reading, writing, and arithmetic, the importance of the one world process. We see it coming. We see one nation after another fighting for liberty and falling into slavery. All these little countries now are trying to be separate again. But in being separate, they take upon themselves all the burdens of a major power. The little separate nation is struggling desperately to survive financially. It has to borrow money. It has to mortgage its own future. It has to do all kinds of things in order that its little country, which is not much larger than somebody's backyard, contains a true and completely autonomous regime. With money, they get a little richer, then the dictators move in and take the money and leave the country. It is all verging toward this problem that the abuse of wealth is a form of suicide which the country has to face. We cannot continue the present course of action without desperate consequences. So we must begin, perhaps even in our own families, to recognize that cooperation is the only source of strength, and that cooperation is best advanced when it establishes a pattern which others can follow and build and work with. There is no reason at all why we should ever have to have old age pensions, or we should have to have Social Security, or we should have to have insurance of any kind. If each individual is backed by the rest of 6 billion people, there's no possible way in which he can fail to have what he needs. Because actually, no matter how much he gets, no matter how much he takes from this bank, the World Bank, at the end of 100 years, there is exactly to the dime in that bank what there was when it started. Because no matter what he does with the money, it goes back into that bank, indirectly. In the meantime, he gets the hospital work that he needs, or he gets the dentistry that he requires. But the dentist then deposits the money. But little by little, everything comes back. There is in this concept something against the feeling that we have that monetary systems are temporary. We judge them by paper notes or silver currency, and after many, many years of desperate striving, a small committee got it possible to put in God request on the paper money. It's not only we do not trust in God, because if we really trusted in God, we would do those things which have been advocated and endorsed by the great religious teachers of all time, namely that the ultimate end of all things is the brotherhood of all that lives. Now, there's no brotherhood in competition. There is no brotherhood in exploitation. There is no advance in civilization by hoarding up something that must then be taken by disaster or conquest. The end of conquest comes if the average dictator was not able to look forward to taking over the prime assets of a nation, he would soon be in some other line of business. It is not any use to anyone to do what we do today if we cannot have more than our share of the realities of life. Now, this does not mean that we put a top on incomes. That has been one answer that has been advocated, but has had very little support. We don't need to do that. The tax upon incomes is unimportant, really. If we remove interest on mortgages and a few of these fancy trimmings, there is absolutely no need for any limitation upon not reasonable income. It is the fact that this income is exploited. The whole theory is exploited, that we get into trouble. If a man makes $1 million and somebody gets half of it for building him a home, that half goes back to the World Bank. The plumber and the paper hanger and the garage man takes another piece of it. And in the course of a reasonable length of time, everything that was given to that man out of the World Bank is equated by a similar deposits in that bank. All the people the original borrower bought for have in turn been paid, and their payments go back into the bank, and it goes back time and time again. There is no loss. There is no way in which anybody can borrow the bank out into bankruptcy. There is no one can run that bank or force its closure. It has no stockholders. It has nothing of this nature. It is a simple and direct manner by which we can serve the population of the world by organizing the good which the world has to offer, the beauties, the ideals, the principles, the educational factors. It inspires invention and does all these things, and most of all, it gives the individual the sense that he cannot go broke. He cannot go broke for a very simple reason. He never had anything. He can't lose it because the complete world pattern, his world, has it. And that world makes it available to him when he needs it. But there is no reason in the world why the individual should have a home foreclosed on him. There is no reason why he should lose his job.
Hey, Jim, wake up.
There is no reason why a new invention should put tens of thousands out of work.
Yeah, I'm on my way.
There is no reason why, or any particular thought in connection with these problems that is sensible or real. We are in a world where we can be safe, but we cannot be safe and utterly selfish. Selfishness is one of the problems that we have. We look over the human character and we compare this character with the admonitions of Scripture, for example. And we can use either this religion or any other major religion. And we will find that our living is inconsistent with the religions which we claim to believe and the denominations which we belong to.